Thank you for downloading this William Hill podcast. You can get the latest odds, offers, and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app, and in any of our shops around the UK.
The Punt, William Hill's top flight football podcast.
Yes, hello, welcome along to The Punt, the midweek edition, looking ahead to this week's action in the Champions League and the Europa League. No Lee Phelps this week, though, so my name's Mark Walton in the presenter's chair, and I'm joined as the pundit by Mr. Dave Kellner. How are you, Dave?
I'm very well, thank you, Mr. Walton. This is the hottest seat in the house, this one. Stepping in for Lee Phelps this week. He's set the bar kindly enough, so I just have to step over it. I don't have to do any jumping, I just have to step over it. So hopefully we'll be able to find someone who's looking forward to the European action this midweek.
Yeah, good. I've never seen you work so hard, Dave, actually. Out in the office, you were there carefully perusing the form. So you got any strong opinions this week?
I've got a few. There are a couple of tricky games, particularly in the Europa League, which we'll get onto on Thursday night. But hopefully we've got some good bets here. I think there are some tasty prices around. So fingers crossed we'll be able to emulate Lee Phelps's work in the early part of the season, and we'll get some winners this midweek.
Hopefully so. As you mentioned, the Europa League games do look rather tricky. But we're starting with the Champions League, obviously, and Tuesday night's matches. Two great matches to look forward to on Tuesday night. We'll start with Barcelona against Paris Saint-Germain. Barcelona are 1-3. The draw 4-1. PSG are 15-2. It's 3-1 to Barcelona on aggregate. Barcelona, after the first leg win, then went on to win 2-0 against Valencia. Goals from Suarez and Messi. We saw Suarez to good effect in the first leg between these two. And it's 12 without defeat for Barcelona. 11 wins and one draw. They're in very good form. Paris Saint-Germain, though, now with it all to do. They've got those three away goals to overturn. Although Ibrahimovic is back, which is a positive.
He is back, and that is a positive. Like you mentioned, that they've got a couple of big players back. Marco Verratti's back after suspension as well. However, they're still missing Thiago Motta, and Thiago Silva was replaced by David Luiz, who was expected to be out for 4 weeks in the first leg. So I always
think he probably wishes he was.
Yeah, I think so. He was schooled, wasn't he, by Luis Suarez in particular in that first leg. And the problem I have with David Luiz is the problem that everyone has with David Luiz. Just positionally, he gets out of control sometimes. And when he made the move from Chelsea to PSG, I was looking forward to seeing him link up with Thiago Silva, because Thiago Silva is such an experienced, quality defender. He could almost put his arm around David Luiz and tell him where he was going wrong. But with David Luiz having to come on for Thiago Silva, that completely worked against Paris Saint-Germain. And they're not going to overturn this deficit. Barcelona will qualify for the semi-finals of the Champions League, because you look at their record, they've lost just one of their last 31 Champions League home matches. They've won 24 of them, including all three in the group stage this time round. And of their last 9 home games in the competition, they've won 8 and drawn 1. So this is almost impossible for Paris Saint-Germain. The other problem with Paris Saint-Germain is they've got George Van de Ville in defence, and that opens up many possibilities. It's something I mentioned before the first leg. Neymar plays out on that side. Luis Suarez exploited George Van de Ville on that side as well. I find it difficult to oppose Barcelona in the 90 minutes market as well here, but Paris Saint-Germain must go for this game. They've got to attack, and with Zlatan Ibrahimovic being back, I think it's good news that he can link up with Edinson Cavani, who's coming for a little bit of criticism this time, this season really, Edinson Cavani. So it's a good thing that Zlatan Ibrahimovic is back alongside him on this occasion. I think they had chances in the first leg. I think they'll get chances in this leg as well. You look at where Barcelona are weakest. We've talked about their strengths in Neymar, Messi and Suarez up front, but they are weakest at the back. Gerard Piqué playing alongside Javier Mascherano, who has been transformed into a central defender, with Sergio Busquets just holding everything together at the back. That's where they can still be exploited. So the bet that I like here is one of the bets towards the top of the betting page, and it's Barcelona to win and both teams to score at 8-5. We've seen as a neutral, it's a great game to watch this, isn't it, Mark? Because you look back through their recent record, we've had a couple of 3-1s. Barcelona have beaten Paris Saint-Germain 3-1 on the last couple of occasions they've met, which includes the first leg here and that home win back on the 10th of December in Group F. And the match before that, Barcelona were beaten by Paris Saint-Germain 3-2 in Paris. So we've had entertaining games. I think we'll get another entertaining game here. So Barcelona are 1-3 to win the match, which is very short. But Barcelona to win and both teams to score 8-5 looks attractive to me.
Yeah, I like it. PSG obviously have to go for it.
Yeah.
And I think Barcelona will just pick them apart at the back again. The combination between Suarez, Neymar and Messi is one of the best front three partnerships probably ever. And Thierry Henry alluded to it on Sky Sports, saying that the way it's set up now, it's similar to when he played at the club, because they've got a real number nine in the shape of Suarez. Mm. And he gets a bit of a run of things because people are concentrating on the wide man in Messi and Neymar, and it really just worked for him. It's I can see Barcelona win. I can see both teams scoring. So yeah,
I like Neymar to score any time. I mean, it was 6-4 in the first leg for Neymar to score any time, but obviously they were away from home, so the price is all bigger than they are on this occasion. Neymar's 10-11 to get a goal any time. Luis Suarez is 5-6. Lionel Messi is in the market at 8-13. Something else I mentioned on last week's podcast was Luis Suarez and his drive to succeed in the Champions League. It far outweighs his drive to succeed in La Liga this season. That's why he made that and the cash is why he made the move from Liverpool to Barcelona. So he is highly motivated in terms of, I think this Barcelona team's easily the most likely winners of the Champions League right now. So I like Suarez at 5-6 and Neymar at 10-11, both to score goals. But I just side Neymar because, as mentioned before, he'll be up against George van der Veel, and I think van der Veel's okay coming forward, but he's definitely suspect defensively, in my opinion. So I like Neymar anytime at 10-11, but my main bet here would be Barca to win and both teams to score at 8-5.
Okay. Moving on to the other game on Tuesday evening, Bayern Munich against Porto. Bayern Munich are 1-3. The draw 4-1. Porto are 15-2. Bayern Munich have pretty much run away with the Bundesliga, so they don't need to worry about that. Mm-hmm. They can concentrate entirely on this. Although two defeats in their last six, the first leg against Porto and against Borussia Mönchengladbach in the league, they take on a Porto side that have only had one defeat in their last 16 games. Mm. And they, of course, won the first leg with that 3-1 victory. It's all to do for Bayern here. Do they do it, do you think?
I don't think so. I think Porto can qualify here. You look at the qualification prices, and it's 5-6 each of two to qualify. And you can imagine that a lot of punters out there, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I'd imagine that they're looking at Bayern Munich to overturn this 3-1 deficit, maybe win 2-0 or 3-0 in this match. I don't think they will. I'm not convinced by Bayern Munich this season. You mentioned that defeat to Borussia Mönchengladbach. They've also been beaten by Wolfsburg in the league as well. How strong is that German league? That's open to debate. We'll come on to Wolfsburg in a bit, but they were obviously dismantled against Napoli in their first leg 4-1. They were beaten twice by Everton in the Europa League as well. So they are striding away as per usual with the Bundesliga, Bayern Munich. But I don't think they are the same sort of team they were 18 months ago, in my personal opinion. They've got injuries as well, and that's proving key. Robben's out. He's been out since the 22nd of March with his abdominal injury. Franck Ribéry has been out with an ankle injury since the 11th of March. David Alaba's been out for a long time. Mehdi Benicia has been sidelined as well. They might have Bastian Schweinsteiger back for this match, which would be a big fillip for them. And Xavi Martinez might come back into the team as well. So team news will be, I think, quite important in this game. If Bastian Schweinsteiger's back, he'll offer that back four a little bit of protection. I read a great piece from zonal marking. It was something that was very noticeable in the first leg. Porto pressed Bayern Munich, and what they did more effectively than I expected them to do was they managed to dispossess Xabi Alonso quite easily. And the way they did that was Jackson Martinez would, when they didn't have the ball, would drop back into midfield, not into midfield, but he would make sure he pressurised Xabi Alonso, because Xabi Alonso likes to do his work in front of the back four. He would drop off his marker and pressure Jackson Martinez, and it actually contributed to their first two goals. Martinez dispossessed Alonso for the opener before Neuer conceded the penalty, and Ricardo Quaresma caught out Jerome Boateng for the second of those two goals. That a good piece from Zonal Marking about that. And Jackson Martinez wasn't fully fit for that first leg, apparently, as well. I think it's imperative that they don't fall into the same trap maybe Monaco fell into when defending their lead against Arsenal. They just allowed Arsenal to have complete possession of the ball and drop so deep. I don't think Porto will do that. I think the way Porto will work is they'll concede possession to Bayern Munich, because Bayern Munich have more possession than anybody in world football. But they will harry them when the opportunity arises. And I've not been impressed with Bayern Munich, as mentioned. Their home record, by the way, is incredible. You look at their home record in the competition this season. If you're looking for a pro Bayern Munich bet here, they've scored 13 goals without conceding. Admittedly, more than half of those goals came in that 7-0 win against Shakhtar in the last 16 in that second leg. They've got a great record against teams from Portugal as well. They've won 8, drawn 2, and lost none at home against Portuguese opposition in their last 10 matches. But can they overcome such key injuries to key personnel? I'm not sure they can. Their squad is quite deep, but you can't afford to miss players of Robin and Ribéry's stature in particular and get away with it in this competition. What do you think?
I'm going to take you on. I'll tell you for why. Porto, as you mentioned in the first leg, they got straight at Bayern Munich from the word go. They pressed them high up the pitch, they closed them down quickly, and I think it kind of caught Bayern by surprise a little bit, because they're used to playing in front of teams that are desperately trying to defend. And I think it may have just caught them unaware, but now they know what Porto are about. I think they'll set up slightly differently. I think they'll try and work the ball a bit more, use that possession that they always use a little bit more. And I think the class will just tell in the end. And the home record, as you mentioned, is phenomenal.
Oh, it's fantastic. I've talked about personnel problems for Bayern Munich, but not mentioned Porto's big problems, because they have two big problems. Both of them come defensively. Danilo, who's going to join Real Madrid in the summer, that fee's been agreed for Danilo, which is around about €31 million. He got booked in the first leg, so he's suspended. And also out is Alexandro, the other Brazilian. Both those two wing-backs, big misses, because they nullified Rafinha and Juan Bernat in the first leg, and also kept tabs on Philipp Lahm and Thiago Alcantara. So they are big losses for Porto. They need to adapt to that. Meccano could come in. Jose Angel might fill the spot on the right, but it's going to be difficult for them to pressurise Bayern Munich the way they did in the first leg without those two Brazilians playing left and right side. So that's the problem for Porto. But I am against Bayern Munich in this competition, because I don't think they're as good as they were 18 months ago, or as good as they were under Jupp Heynckes. I think I'm not saying Pep Guardiola's taken them backwards, because everyone loves Pep Guardiola, but they're adopting a new approach with him, aren't they? And maybe play more possession-based football rather than attacking quickly and more directly. And I don't think it's worked. I think they lack width without Robin and Ribéry, which means because they played so narrow, Porto found it easy in the first leg to cancel them out. Guardiola needs to come up with a better game plan in this second leg, and whether he can do it with the personnel that's on offer is questionable, and I don't think he can.
Okay.
There you go.
I might have to disagree with her. If Schweinsteiger's back and you've got Xabi Alonso pulling the strings, you've got Götze in there, Müller in there, I think there's enough.
Where's
class.
The width?
Müller will go out wide, I think.
Yeah, I just don't see... You see Ribéry and Robin are natural wide players, aren't they? That can cut in, but can also deliver quality from left and right to the likes of Lewandowski and Müller down the middle. They're huge absences, Ribéry and Robin, and I don't think... I think Porto should be favourites to qualify. I'll go one step further here as well. Porto to qualify is my main bet at 5-6. I like Porto plus one at 11-5. I don't think Bayern Munich win this match.
Wow.
There you go.
Okay. Moving on to Wednesday's action then. Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid. The Madrid derby is where we'll start. Real are 5-6. The draw is 5-2 and Atleti are 100-30. Real Madrid unbeaten in the last five games. They take on Atleti, who are unbeaten in the last 10 games. It was obviously 0-0 in the first meeting between these two sides. But interestingly enough, Real haven't beaten Atleti in the last seven meetings between the two sides. February 2014 was the last time Real beat Atletico Madrid in 90 minutes.
Yeah,
Atleti have a
weird
real hold over them.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? They do face each other a lot, don't they?
It's the eighth meeting
this season,
yeah,
which is remarkable, really. It was an entertaining 0-0, I thought, that first leg. And they dominated the first leg, really, Real Madrid, in all honesty. But they're underpriced here, in my opinion, at 5-6 because of that recent record against Atletico Madrid, and again, a couple of injury problems for Real Madrid in this game. Gareth Bale's got a calf problem. He limped off after 5 minutes against Malaga at the weekend. Karim Benzema missed that game entirely.
Mm.
He's hoping to be back and fit. So again, team news important here. Luka Modric, though, is their main problem, I think, to cover for him, because he went off after an hour with knee ligament problems against Malaga at the weekend, and he's going to be out for approximately 6 weeks. Marcelo also received a booking in the first leg, so he's out for this game as well, suspended. I think those are big problems, especially Luka Modric, because you remember when they went through their poor spell earlier on in the season, Real Madrid,
mm-hmm,
it was because of his absence. He has been influential for Real. They have a decent squad, as you would imagine, so they've got players in contention to come in for those places. Ilhamendi might step up. Sami Khedira, these players have been used sparingly by Carlo Ancelotti this season, really. But Atletico are going strongly at the moment. They're unbeaten in 10 games in all competitions, winning five of them. They beat Deportivo La Coruña 2-1 at the weekend as well. They've kept seven clean sheets in that time. They know how to defend this side against Real Madrid as well. I fancy Atletico Madrid. I was particularly impressed with Arda Turan in that first match. I thought he was fantastic,
yeah,
for Atletico. Antoine Griezmann's in great goal scoring form as well. You look at what he's done recently. He's got four in his last five. Didn't score, obviously, in the first leg draw against Madrid, but he got both against Deportivo at the weekend. He's got 20 this season in La Liga as well. That's four better than his previous term. There's one bet that, if you're looking for a pro Real Madrid bet, I'd be looking at Antoine Griezmann to score and Real Madrid to win the game in the anytime reverse win cast, which is in the market at 15-2. But I'm not convinced that Real Madrid can get over the line here. I think you're getting 6-4 on Atletico Madrid to qualify for this game, which, as long as it's not a 0-0 draw, is basically Atletico Madrid to win or draw the game. I think that's outstanding. I really do. That 6-4. It's been cut, actually. It's 5-4 now.
Somebody else is on the bandwagon.
Yeah, someone else is on that bandwagon. When I was looking at this game around about a couple of hours ago, it was definitely 6-4 and 1-2. It's just eased slightly now. Real Madrid have just eased slightly to 4-7, and Atletico Madrid into 5-4. That doesn't surprise me in the slightest, because Real Madrid have to prove that they can overcome the absences of Bale, Modric and Marcelo in this game, and that they've got Isco, who's definitely going to step in. But I wonder if Ancelotti's going to change his formation as well, because he likes playing with those three strikers, obviously Bale, Ronaldo, with Benzema through the middle. If Benzema's out, you'd imagine Ronaldo goes into that role, but have they got two other players that can fill? Isco can fill one of the positions. Who fills the other? I'm not sure they've got anyone capable. Javier Hernandez is likely not to be there in the summer. I don't see him as a ready-made replacement, because he's not strong enough, in my opinion, to fill one of those roles. So I like that. I'll just like the Atletico Madrid to qualify at 5-4, even though it's been clipped in a little bit.
I agree with you on this occasion.
Okay.
And I think if Benzema is missing, that's massive as well, because he doesn't always get the credit I feel he deserves.
Mm.
The amount of work he goes through, the assists for Ronaldo and so on, and obviously being able to finish and chip in with 20 goals a season, I think he's a big miss for them and the way they play. So
yeah,
be interesting.
No, I agree. He does. it is slightly, it is in the Olivier Giroud mould a little bit, isn't he? I think he's a better player than Olivier Giroud, but he's very workmanlike, you'd suggest, but he does offer Real Madrid a different option when Ronaldo and Bale are all pace. Those two are physical presences as well, but he can really hold the ball up extremely well, can't he, Benzema, and feed off Ronaldo and Bale. As I mentioned, every time we do a podcast when we're talking about Real Madrid, I'm not convinced Bale is going to be at Madrid next season. He just... Ronaldo likes to be the centre of attention, doesn't he? And whether on his nose might have been put a little bit out of joint with Bale going in there with that record transfer fee. And the publications that report on Real Madrid have openly criticised his performances this season and the president for signing him for such a large fee. It just doesn't seem to be... Even though his record's pretty decent, Gareth Bale, since he's been at Real, he doesn't seem to... He never wows me in these games when I'm watching him. Recently, anyway. He just seems to be on the fringes of things. Maybe I probably not watched enough of Real Madrid to make those comments, but he just seems a bit unsettled there, in my opinion.
I think Ronaldo might be part of the reason why he's unsettled.
Yeah,
there's
possibly.
Definitely something going on.
A little bit of friction there.
I think so, All of a sudden. I think it's partly because Ronaldo's not entirely happy.
Yeah.
And the fans jeered him the other week and he reacted to it, didn't he? And I think it's just a bit of a mess there, to be honest, with that situation.
It'll be very interesting to see if they don't win the Champions League, and if they don't do the double and win the Champions League and La Liga, Ancelotti's not going to be there in the next season, so we might have a big shake-up at Real Madrid. Might be a David De Gea, Gareth Bale in the opposite direction kind of move, with a lot of cash going from Manchester United to Real as well, perhaps. Yeah. Who knows?
I don't think they'll win it, by the way.
You don't think
Real will win the Champions League?
Well, I think they go out. I think they go out against Atletico as well.
Yeah,
I think that 5-4, perfectly acceptable. Obviously, I wanted the 6-4, but that's been kiboshed now. So I'll take the bet that I like there best of all is the Atletico Madrid to qualify at 6-4. But I will have a few quid just in case Real Madrid surprise me on Antoine Griezmann to score and Real to win at 15-2. And if you're looking at Griezmann to score for Atletico Madrid any time in the match, I like that 11-5. That's a big price over 2-1 for it. He's a really quality player, Antoine Griezmann.
Okay, just to clarify, 5-4. I think you tried to pinch 6-4.
Oh, did I try it again?
I think so, yeah.
I do apologise.
Monaco against Juventus. Monaco against Juventus is where we finish the Champions League games anyway. And it's 11-5 for Monaco. The draw is 2-1. And Juventus are 7-5. Monaco, third in Ligue 1, only one win in their last five, though, and that was against mid-table Cannes. So they're not exactly in flying form. They take on Juve, who are 1-0 up from the first leg. That's Arturo Vidal penalty. The difference between the two sides, well clear at the top of Serie A. They can concentrate entirely on the Champions League, and they've won 8 of their last 9. So can you see past Juve here?
It's tough, isn't it? I'm not convinced they're definitely going to win the game, Juventus, but you look back through their record recently, they've just been incredible defensively. Only conceded one goal in their last 9 matches in all competitions, Juventus. And in that first leg, that penalty was more than contentious because Ricardo Cavallio did foul, but it was outside the box, clearly. Mm. So it should have been a free kick, and they were slightly fortunate. But they probably shaded the match and deserved to win it anyway. But they're looking for the first semi-final appearance since 2002-2003. So it's been a long spell without European success for Juventus. And there'll be a little bit of pressure on, I think, on Wednesday evening against Monaco. But they managed to win that first match without conceding, and that is so important in European competition nowadays. So this is going to be incredibly difficult for Monaco to get anything. I don't think Monaco score in this game. I like the Juventus clean sheet at 11-8. I think that's a very good bet. Monaco's run to the quarterfinals really built on solid defending and hitting teams on the counter-attack, which we saw was particularly evident against Arsenal, wasn't it? Because Arsenal attacked them, left themselves vulnerable at the back. Monaco sat deep, hit them on the counter-attack and won that game at the Emirates 3-1 and then just clung on in that second leg, really. but Juventus are too shrewd to make those sorts of errors. They're not as naive as Arsenal defensively. They will know that a 0-0 is good enough here. Monaco did rest a few players at the weekend. They drew 1-1 with Rennes. The most notable players they rested were Anthony, Martial, Ricardo Carvalho, and Jeffrey Condogbia. He's their best player, I think. Jeffrey Condogbia plays in that holding role. I do like him. He had a couple of chances actually in that first game against Juventus. But Juventus, their run, they owe a lot to Carlos Tevez, really, because he's been absolutely sensational this season for them. I don't think they go after this game. I think they sit back, let Monaco try and attack them, and don't allow Monaco to have that opportunity on the counter-attack. So I like the Juventus clean sheet at 11-8. I think it's a fantastic bet. And the other one that I like is the 0-0 draw at 13-2. I think that's a great bet. I see this being a dour match, this one. Juventus will set up not to be broken down, and Monaco don't have the quality to break them down. So I see this being a 0-0 draw at 13-2.
Okay.
Yep.
I was looking at, you know, we do the correct score group betting.
Yes.
Anybody who thinks Juve will win, 1-0, 2-0 and 2-1, 19-10.
That's okay.
I think that's okay. But then you could have a saver on the 0-0 if you think it's going to be that tight.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I don't mind that play. My only reservation with Juventus is they've played their full sides. You know, they've not rested any players recently. They've had a great run in Serie A. They're going to win the title, but they've been playing their full team week in, week out, whereas Monaco did rest some players at the weekend, at least, despite only getting that 1-1 draw with Rennes. At least they gave their players a little bit of time to recuperate ahead of this big match, whereas Juventus went out and played a full side at the weekend and won 2-0. So I see a 0-0 draw. I do. I think I'll take the 13-2 on the 0-0. But main bet there is Juventus to keep a clean sheet at 11-8.
Okay. What price do we have on both teams to score no in this game? Have you got that written down? Both teams to score no is 4-6. I think that's a relatively safe proposition, because if you look at recent results, last 9 games for Juventus, I've had only one team scoring.
Yeah,
it's just the way they played.
It is. Yeah, I agree with that. I just then you've got to think, if you're playing that, though, you've got to think, rather than take that price 4-6, you're thinking about Monaco to qualify, aren't you? If you don't want to take the Juventus clean sheet at 11-8, do you see Monaco outscoring Juventus, and Juventus, if Monaco say score twice, do you see Juventus not scoring a goal at all in the game? I find that hard to envisage. That's my only problem with that.
Yeah, I just think if Juve are going to set up and, like I said, try not to just give anything away and go for the 0-0 effectively.
Yes.
Monaco could still just pinch one and then still only one team scoring.
That's true. I don't see it. I just don't think this Monaco side, I don't believe, have the quality to break Juventus down if Juventus set up the way that I think they will, by playing very, very cautiously and ultra defensively in this match. Juventus could win 1 or 2-0. That is conceivable. But then I don't think Monaco score. I just don't see Monaco scoring in this match. I don't think they've got the quality up front to break Juventus down. So I'll play the clean sheet.
Okay. I do kind of agree with you on that. I was just basically saying there's
other ways to play it.
That give you different outcomes. Yeah. But obviously I prefer yours with a price as well, so.
It's odds against, isn't it? Rather than odds on, which appeals to a lot of punters.
Mm. It should do, shouldn't it? To the Europa League we go next. Thursday evening's 4 quarter-final matches. We'll start with Zenit St. Petersburg against Sevilla. Zenit are 5-4. The draw is 23-10. Sevilla are 11-5. Zenit top of the Russian Premier League, unbeaten at home in 2015, the whole of the calendar year. They take on Sevilla, who are 5th. In La Liga, Sevilla 2-1 up on aggregate. This is quite finely poised, really, isn't it?
Yeah, Sevilla have been great at home. 32 unbeaten in all competitions, stretching back to the 14th of March 2014, which is sensational, really. But they're not as strong on the road, and they're on the road for this particular clash. And even though they overturned that 1-0 deficit to beat Zenit St. Petersburg 2-1 in the first leg, I was encouraged by Zenit, in all honesty. I thought they set up very well. They'll try and I think they'll try and protect this lead, Sevilla, in this match. And they've got solid players from a striking perspective, but I don't see them as being as solid defensively. You look at their main protagonists and they're all forward players. Kevin Gamero is a fantastic prospect, and Carlos Bacca, who came on as substitute in that opening match and turned the match, really. Carlos Bacca, he's part of the headline offer. He's 4-1 for him to score and Sevilla to win in 90 minutes. But I think this could be a very entertaining match, this one. I really think this one could be a decent match. I fancy Zenit to win it, though. I think Zenit at 5-4 to win the match is good. I like Zenit St. Petersburg to qualify as well at 6-4. They've got Hulk returning from suspension. Danny also returns for suspension. Smolnikov, Igor Smolnikov, and Domenico Cresito all back. And it's going to be a fiery atmosphere as well. That's the one thing that Zenit's fans pride themselves on, creating just a hostile atmosphere. And this is a stern test for Sevilla, who were outplayed for a lot of that match, really, until the final 20 minutes, where Zenit St. Petersburg got a little bit nervous and dropped deeper, allowed Carlos Bacca and Denis Suarez to turn that match around. I think Zenit are the better of the two sides, so I'll play the Zenit St. Petersburg to qualify at 6-4, and I do like them to win the match at 5-4 as well.
You just play the 6-4, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'll just play the bigger of the two prices, because the 6-4 to qualify is nicer than the 5-4. I suppose they could win 1-0 and it could go extra time, and then they could go out on 8 in extra time or penalties, but I don't see that happening. I think they'll win this game.
Yeah.
I think it's that simple. I do think Bacca's, if you're looking at a goal scorer for Sevilla, I do think Bacca is a better bet than Kevin Gamero. I think he's a better player. He's 6-4 to score any time. Kevin Gamero is in the market at 5-4. Gamero is maybe a little bit speedier than Bacca, but Bacca scored 17 goals this season, and when he came on, he was the one that caused Ezequiel Garay and Nicholas Lombard's real problems at the back, whereas Gamero hadn't. So I think that Bacca's the better of the two players, but Zenit, I think Zenit win this match, and I was impressed with them in that first leg. I think they take out Sevilla, so I'll play them at a big price, 6-4, to qualify for the semi-finals of the Europa League.
Zenit then for Dave in that one. Moving on to Dnipro against Club Bruges. Dnipro are 21-20. The draw is 9-4, and Club Bruges are 14-5. It finished 0-0 in the first leg, and I'm just glad you're punditing this one and not me.
Yeah, this is one of my best bets, actually, in the Europa League on Thursday night. Really? I think Dnipro at 21-20 looked really, really solid. They beat Olympic Donetsk 5-0 at the weekend. Club Bruges did get a result against Anderlecht. They won 2-1. But Dnipro went into Belgium, into Club Bruges, and completely dominated that match. I thought they were fantastic for the main part. There's a winger that Lee mentioned on the podcast last week who I want to put up for a goal anytime here. Evgen Konoplyanka is 2-1. That's been cut as well. That was 21-10 earlier. It's 2-1 now for him to score any time. I think that's a very, very good bet. He had the best chances to score against Club Bruges. But Club Bruges, their keeper, who's an Australian, Matthew Ryan, had an incredible match, really. And they survived a late onslaught to remain, to extend that impressive home run they've got. Club Bruges have been brilliant at home this season. But I thought Dnipro were much the better two sides. Leo Rafeliov had a couple of chances as well. I don't see how Club Bruges go into Dnipro and get any sort of result. So I'll play Konoplyanka to score. He's got 7 goals in 17 matches this season. So him to score at 2-1. Anytime, definitely the most threatening player in the first leg, reportedly very, very talented as well. Him to score 2-1, and Dnipro to win this match 21-20.
Dave signing with Dnipro there. Then moving on to Fiorentina against Dynamo Kiev. Fiorentina are 3-4. The draw is 13-5. Dynamo Kiev 15-4. Fiorentina 6th in Serie A. Having a bit of a wobble at the minute, though. Only one win in their last five. They take on Dynamo Kiev, who are top of the Ukrainian Premier League. 8 without defeat for them. Finished 1-1 in the first leg. But I'm slightly leaning towards Dynamo Kiev here.
So I thought this was impossible. This was the one match that I looked at and I thought, I haven't got an earthly here, really. I like Fiorentina actually at 3-4, just about to win this match. It was a 1-1 draw in Kiev, and Fiorentina have only won one of their last four European home games, which is pretty poor. 1-1, drawn 2, and lost 1. Dynamo though aren't very good travellers. They've lost 3 of the last 4 away in Europe. And Fiorentina are yet to lose in 9 games against Ukrainian sides as well. They've won 5 and drawn 4. I thought Sergei Rebrov, who manages Dynamo Kiev, he was a little bit downbeat after that performance. He mentioned that it was a hard game and it was a pity they conceded late on in that match, because Fiorentina did hit them late on to get that crucial away goal. But he bemoaned their tactics a lot of the time in that first game. He said that we tried to play compact in midfield where Fiorentina build up their attacks, but it was difficult. Overall, we coped with it in the first half. After the break, it was much harder, and we felt that we lacked the experience of big matches. We only have a few of them in the Ukrainian league, and I think that European experience could be crucial in this match for Fiorentina. And that late goal for Kumar Babacar just changed the complexion of the tie completely. I think it's going to be difficult for Dynamo Kiev to get hold of the ball. I think possession is so important in this game. We saw that in the first leg. Fiorentina completely dominated possession. They deserved that equaliser. And they pressed them high up the field as well, Fiorentina. The likes of Andrei Yarmolenko, Lawns and Sergei Sidorok, they had to defend deep, and when they eventually got possession, they didn't have the energy to attack Fiorentina. So I think Fiorentina at home will have a lot of the ball, see a lot of the ball, and Dynamo Kiev, when they do eventually win it, will be so tired because of the way Fiorentina are pressed that they won't be able to launch anything from an attacking perspective. So I like Fiorentina to win the game. Not mad keen on the price at 3-4, but I think Fiorentina get this one done because of their European experience.
All right, it is a tough one to call.
It is difficult, that match, very difficult.
Yeah. And in the first leg, it wasn't really a game of many chances. It was a bit of a war of attrition, and Fiorentina's eventual pressure told with a late goal.
Yeah, I think that late goal just changed everything.
It's an away goal, isn't
it? Yeah, it just changed everything. I mean, if Dynamo Kiev could have come into this match knowing that they can go through with a 0-0, it would be completely different. But because they've got to get a goal in this game,
yeah,
I think it's going to be very tough for them. So I'll go. I will take Fiorentina as my main bet just to win the match at 3-4.
Okay. Final game in the Europa League is the match between Napoli and Wolfsburg. Napoli are 13-10. The draw 13-5, and Wolfsburg are 15-8. Napoli fourth in Serie A. 3 straight wins for them. Suddenly started beating teams quite comprehensively as well. 3-0, 4-1, and 3-0. The last three results. And 4-1 was against Wolfsburg, who were flying, really, second in the Bundesliga, the surprise package in that league. And barring the first leg of this game, they'd only had one defeat since November. But it all kind of fell apart, didn't it?
They were badly exposed, I thought. Dieter Hecking, their manager, came out afterwards and mentioned how they were exceptional, Napoli. This quote, which I loved, he says, "They were defensively compact and offensively ice cold today," which summed it up perfectly, because they managed to combat Wolfsburg's main strength, which is their attacking quality. You look at what Wolfsburg have done this season in the Bundesliga. They scored 62 goals in 28 Bundesliga matches, only behind Bayern Munich, who have got 74. They've got 22 in 11 Europa League matches, which is pretty decent as well. But they were completely exposed, and it was the quality of the two strikers, Napoli's two main protagonists, Gonzalo Higuain and Marek Hamsik, that really punished them. And it was ice cold finishing, because they had a couple of chances, scored both. And Higuain's now on 7 goals in the Europa League this season. Hamsik's got 4 as well. They're both Champions League quality footballers, aren't they, those two? So in the Europa League, when it's just that step lower, they can really make a big impact. You look at all the prices in this particular match, Mark, and you see them, and everyone, well, the compilers clearly expecting goals in this game. You look at the over 2.5 goals is very, very short. I think it was 8-15, the over 2.5 goals, and 11-8, the under 2.5 goals. Both teams to score is short, 8-15, yes, both teams to score. So clearly a lot's been read into that first leg, and Wolfsburg's attacking prowess in the Bundesliga and the Europa League this season, and the compilers expect goals in the game. I'm completely opposite. I expect this to be low scoring, because you've got a manager in Rafael Benitez who knows how to perform in Europe and knows the job that needs to be done. He's won the Europa League a couple of times, won the Champions League as well, and he will set up defensively in this game, despite Napoli's best weapons maybe coming in the final third. And he knows that if they get beat 1-0, that's fine. If they draw 0-0, that's fine. I like under 1.5 goals in this game at 100-30, because Benitez is so shrewd tactically.
You say if they get beat 1-0, that's fine. They could get beat 3-0 and still go through.
They could, precisely. So they're going to be going through to the next stage of the Europa League. I just think Wolfsburg's side's a little bit young, and that youth was exposed in the worst possible way in that first leg. But I'll take the compilers on here. They expect a lot of goals in the game, obviously, because you look at those prices on over 2.5 and both teams to score, etc., etc. They're very, very short. I'll go under 1.5 goals here at 100-30 as my best bet.
Okay. Do you lean anywhere in terms of a result?
Yeah, I'd share Napoli.
Because I was just thinking along the lines of Napoli winning under 2.5 at 9-2.
That's not a bad bet. I'd definitely share Napoli in the game, because Wolfsburg, I think, will go there knowing they can't win, and that's demoralising. And the way, just the way Dieter Hecking spoke about that performance after the first leg, it didn't instil me with any confidence. So I doubt it's instilled the players with much confidence either.
Yeah. It's kind of giving Napoli too much respect, isn't it? And just basically saying, oh, they're better than us.
Yeah, he's a slightly younger manager than Benitez, but has nowhere near the experience, and they allowed Napoli so much space in that first leg that it cost them dearly. And as I mentioned early on in the podcast, I'm not convinced by the German league at the moment at all. You look through that league and a couple of teams have been badly exposed recently. Bayern Munich were exposed in that first leg against Porto. Whether or not they can overturn the deficit remains to be seen. And Wolfsburg have been exposed a few times in the Europa League this season now, which is a big negative if you're looking at the, at least they've got teams in the Champions League and the Europa League, but it's a big negative in terms of the German leagues.
All right. Yeah. I know you don't normally do naps midweek, but do you have a favourite bet or anything?
Yeah, my favourite bet, you know what, I'll go with Evgen Konoplyanka as my best bet. Him to score any time at 2-1 for Dnipro. I love Dnipro to win that game at 21-20 as well. I like all my bets though, Mark.
Of course.
They're like my little babies, and I like them all equally.
Wow. Well, thanks, Dave. Good luck and enjoy this week's action.
Thank you, sir.
So there you go. That's Dave Kellner's thoughts on the midweek football. Lee will be back from the weekend with Dave back in the presenter's chair, so it will be normal service resumed. But in the meantime, thank you for listening, and good luck if you're having a bet.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.